Good morning and welcome. It's 11 o'clock. It's time for Brass Tack Sunday. I'm your host, Corey Lane. We go until quarter after one this afternoon. My producer and technical operator, Dennis DJ Johnson, he's in the booth. And I wouldn't say uncouth, but he's in the booth. My special guest today is the president of the National Organization of Women, Mrs. Marsha Hines Lane. And she is no stranger to you on the airwaves. And you know, we've had cause to take a pause and have a man or men in here in the recent past to really discuss issues that the men have been fighting on, men's rights, maintenance, access, those types of issues. And I think it's only fair, as a station that prides itself on genuine balance, that we take pause at this time to speak to the women and to look at where they are in society today as the society changes and it evolves. So that is what we are going to be doing today. And of course, we had some incidents, as we always do from time to time, of domestic violence and different things. So a lot of different things we're hoping to cover between now and quarter after one. And we do this today with the kind compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated.
For building surprise, big or small, at Williams Metals we have it all. Angles, flats, cement and doors, lumber, windows and much, much more.
Get all your lumber needs from us. We have number one treated pine, all different types of plywood, V-joint, siding board and concrete board. In addition, we have grade 3 2x4s and form play for boxing.
Big or small, at Williams Metals we have it all. At Williams Metals we have it all.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Today on Brass Tack Sunday, we look at the agenda of gender. But before we get to that, we have a commentator such as Marsha in the studio. We want to use this opportunity, really, Marsha, to get your take on two of the hot button issues carrying through for this week, which really is sanitation and the squatters. We don't get the benefit of hearing your voice on all these issues. So we just want to take that opportunity to do so. And also to let the callers listening right now know, this is not an invitation for you to comment on that. We are sticking to the agenda of gender, but I just wanted, for the benefit of the listeners this Sunday morning, really to get your take. So let's start with sanitation. We had the issue going with sanitation. What's your take on it?
Thank you very much for having me, Corey. Good morning to you and good morning to the listeners. The issue of sanitation has become one that is an island-wide problem for us over, I would say, the last 3 to 4 years. And I think that the situation somehow seems to be ongoing. And thus, I think it is important for the stakeholders to be able to come to the public and offer some explanations. One of the things that we have done in our governance model over the years is that we are very good at talking when it's not really our turn to talk. And then for some reason, when it becomes our turn to talk, we shy away from talking. And I think that a lot of the crises then that result around these issues come out of the poor communication along with any other issue in the first place. And I think that, you know, experience has taught us that the stakeholders just need to get ahead of the issue and have conversations. We were told that some relief was supposed to be on the way, some trucks were supposed to be coming. If something has happened with that plan, just come out and say so. I mean, people might be upset, but I'm sure they're not going to be as upset as having garbage just, spew across the country and seemingly out of control. The other thing that I want to say to that, though, is that I'm very disappointed right now with the level of the way that Bajans are putting out their garbage, and not only putting out their garbage, but I feel like if we have a problem with illegal dumping, I am an avid hiker, and you go across this country, beautiful gullies, beautiful water trails, cane grounds, wherever you go, there is just piles and piles of refuse. And I think then that in this whole national debate that we're having, yes, the government needs to do more to be able to pick up garbage and to regularize garbage collection. But we also have to have a very frank discussion as a nation about how we as people feel like we have the right to get rid of things that we no longer want, and you know, just the pervasiveness of the bottles and the things that we eat out of. I think it's a holistic discussion and mindset and change that has to happen, both at the level of the government, but then also at the level of the citizenry.
I see a direct connection and almost a correlation between having untidy streets and violence in the community and crime and so on. Mm-hmm. I think when you're not well regulated, I believe that these things filter right through the system until they get from small things, the stealing of the pencil, to grand larceny.
Mm-hmm. So I would agree with you there. What it comes down to, two things: discipline and emotional intelligence. An individual who lives their life in an emotionally intelligent way is less inclined to roll down a car window and just fling what they had outside of it. A person who lives in an emotionally intelligent way is less likely to go into a house to want to steal from it, you know, or to want to do something that is born out of malice. So I agree with you. You asked me as well about the squatting. Now, I think that sometimes we do ourselves a disservice in this country in terms of how we approach a national issue. I think it was very, 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 very unfortunate that we sought to tie the issue of nationalities into the issue of squatting. Wherever you go in the world, squatter settlements are predominantly made up of individuals who would have come to the country to make a living and make a way for themselves. So that really is a non-point. And the way that we consume information in Barbados, once you get a non-point like that going forward of the larger message, it is almost impossible then for people to connect with the larger message. The larger message is that we have had a housing problem in Barbados for years. That is one. We know that we have communities in Barbados where we have three generations of one family living in a two-bedroom house, living in a three-bedroom house. So we have had a problem with providing affordable and reasonable housing for our citizenry for years. That is one of the fundamental issues to be discussed when we're talking about squatting. The second issue is, how does our governmental response to these issues become so dysfunctional that you can have a squatting village that goes from 36 houses to over 300, and we have not heard for anybody's resignation to be rescinded. We have not heard for anybody to face a national fire. Because the reality of the situation is that, like you rightly said, it comes back to the level of indiscipline. And it shows that the level of the indiscipline is not just with the illegal gun owners of this country, but it is also with the individuals who are supposed to be able to create the very discipline that we're looking and saying is missing in the first place. So I don't care where the squatters came from. I don't care if they came from the moon. At the end of the day, discussing where they came from is not going to get us to the crux of the matter in terms of how we solve the situation.
The case in point, I want to point out that the Prime Minister did reveal that in a study, it showed that 80% of the persons were actually Barbadian. Mm. But because the narrative of non-nationals went out, as you said,
ridiculous.
First, we will continue on that. And there are some people that will believe that there's just a majority of non-nationals up there.
Stupidness.
Another point I want to lash on to is this whole idea of a housing crisis. Mm-hmm. Right? And I always thought that that was embedded in family and how family operate. Mm-hmm. Because I believe that from a young age, we have many people trying to get out of the home because there's so much animosity and, you know, two cockroaches can't live in one kind of whole kind of situation. Two mm-hmm. women can't be under this one roof. Mm-hmm. And I think I link that back to financial enfranchisement, because I see other cultures living in one house, but they have enough money to build on and build up. And I think that that is one of our solutions in terms of going up. So we got to touch financial enfranchisement, but not now. The third point I want to pick up that you talked about is accountability. I think that a lot of our problems are predicated on the fact we don't have accountability right across the board. Things can just happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people ask, how did that happen? How could this happen? Is this for real? How did we get back here? Where there's no accountability. The only accountability that we see is every 5 years, when the populace gets an opportunity to go into the booth, and we are then able to hold some people, or at least one person at a time, accountable. Mm-hmm. On to the agenda of gender. I want to start with the... Thank you very much, Marsha, for that start.
You're welcome. It's actually all connected, you know. Yeah, and I really do appreciate that you started the program this way, because there are some people who, when they hear us talk about the issues around gender, they feel it's just really an opportunity to create a space the man hate.
Correct.
And it isn't really about that. It's about all of these issues that we're talking about, the wealth of a society, the distribution of the wealth of a society, and how you create a society where every individual in the society can reach a productive capacity. Correct. That really is what it's all about. So
some people call it the sociologists call it the social ecosystem. Mm-hmm. I like to look at it as a web.
Yes.
All of these things are connected.
Interconnected.
And as through the program, we're going to see that, because when you talk, I'm going to talk about this sometimes, and how that is connected to sometimes, you know, you link up and then there's a child, and then people don't see the connection,
really,
because I get 3 to 5 calls a day from distressed parents, right? And over 60% of those, when you strip down the onion, you go the emotional intelligence, the five whys, you go deep, you realize a lot of the time, the majority of the time, it has to do with parents. And parents are odd, and children preying off of parents, or parents animosity against each other passing on to the child. So it's all connected and interconnected. It is one big web. I want to start though here, or restart here, in terms of the National Organization of Women. I want to look at your tenure so far, and what is the work, the mandate, and what are your plans for the National Organization of Women?
So the National Organization of Women is the umbrella body for all groups in Barbados that offer service to the issues that women and girls have in this society. So we have a number of clubs and organizations that do work, and the National Organization of Women then is just the, if you would like to, the overarching structure that we've set up. The main remit of the National Organization of Women is with respect to policy and connectivity. So when we say connectivity, of course, we know that the lobby for equality and a more rights-based experience for women and girls in the world is not only a Bajan concern. It's regional and it's also international. So the National Organization of Women is the point at which we make those connections with, in terms of regional bodies that are fighting for the same thing and international bodies that are fighting for the same thing. On the policy side, what we're trying to do is to work with stakeholders to be able to have the issues of gender embedded in all of the decisions that are made broadly about governance and how we structure ourselves as a people. So those are the two overarching remits. More recently, the National Organization of Women, we've also started to work on the ground as well, as it were, with some of our clubs and some of our partners. We offer advocacy services particularly. So in a case where a particular woman is having a challenge, we would handhold and advise and try to get that individual closer to help. I think those are the three main things that we're doing right now. Moving forward, I would like to see now invest in regeneration. So a lot of our members right now, I would say, are 50 plus, 45 plus in that age group. And I think that it is critical at this time. I mean, now has been around from 1971. It is important for us to keep our eyes planted in the future and make sure that we have a young stock of women who are able and ready to take on the work that the organization is doing. We've started a junior NOW program in the schools across Barbados, and we've done that for two reasons. First, because we recognize that talking about the issues of gender when somebody gets 20 and 30, by that time, unfortunately, it's too late. We already have girls who are experiencing intimate partner violence and other issues in their what you call teeny bopper relationships. Yes. So it's too late by the time they get that age. So we want to be able to carry the message forward even from the time that they're in school. But the other thing that we're trying to do is to create a love for service and to create an understanding of what service is. And then hopefully out of that junior batch of individuals, we can have the kind of crop then that will come forward and keep the organization rejuvenated.
Funny you said have gender embedded. I think that's really where some of the problem starts. The gender is getting in bed too quickly, and we're getting there. We're building up to the sometime. I want to touch on the whole issue of feminism, because I believe that at the core of having a national organization of women, you have to address the issue of feminism. And what is your take on the evolution of feminism, particularly in the Caribbean?
Mm-hmm. Well, that is an interesting question. Again, I am labeled all across Barbados as a feminist. I mean, in order to be the president of the National Organization of Women, you must be a feminist. Feminism is one of the ways that individuals organize themselves around the quest for equality and more equal spaces for women and girls. But it is only one way, okay? I think that feminism over the years has gotten a lot of rap for, you know, that same, like we were talking about before, man-hating approach to equality and that kind of thing. That is not necessarily something that I want to argue, because I am not a feminist. That is not how I approach my quest for equality for women and girls. I am actually a womanist. A womanist is, it embeds some of the same things in terms of, like I said, equality for women, creating spaces for women and girls that are considerate of living a life in the body of a female and that kind of thing. But one of the most important differentiations for me is that womanism was created by Black women to be able to address the needs of Black women in terms of fighting for equality. So for example, if you are when you take the fight from a womanist perspective, you understand that there are certain things that make both Black women and Black men unequal to begin with. So you're taking into account your history, you're taking into account your heritage, and when you're fighting for equality for yourself, you are also looking at your male son. You're also looking at your male Black brother, and you're saying, how is my fight bound up with their fight as well? So it approaches the issue of female equality from a completely different angle than feminism does. And it definitely is not about man-hating, because womanists want that opportunity to experience the world in union with men.
Right.
Now, not all agendas in terms of women's and girls' equality starts from that point, and I accept that. I'm not going to pretend that I don't know that. But all of them also do not start from a point where they see women and men as not cohabiting in a seamless fashion in a society either. So we have to understand that. One of the other things that womanism is very concerned with, and I think that is a progression from where feminism starts, is that womanists also are very attentive to the relationships between females themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, because of our historical reality, I think is something that we need to pay attention to. Historically, women in the Caribbean, particularly women in the plantation model, have been taught to compete against each other. We compete for any number of things. And that competition has created some very, in some cases, toxic relationships between us as women. And I personally think that we can never become equal, or we can never push the agenda, like you call it, of gender, without also addressing the relationships between and among women. You know, the ability of a younger woman to look at an older woman and see this as somebody that I can go to for counsel and support. The ability of an older woman to look at a younger woman and see this person as a person to handhold and to bring forward. All of those are things, when we really talk about our Barbadian society and what we're going through right now as a nation, I think that we talk about these things as if we have always had glory days. And we have not always had glory days. Like you just rightly said, there are some women who, when their children get to 14 and 15, they say to them, get out of here. All we can live on one roof, too many women on the hair. So we have had embedded dysfunction, I would say, within our relationships, not only family relationships, but like I just said, woman to woman, woman to man, there has been some dysfunction that we have not addressed. And until we address that, I think we will always continue to see some of the struggles that we are seeing as a nation.
All right. The reason I asked particularly for Caribbean feminism is because I believe that that was set up. When it's a setup, I mean, it tried to fashion itself against, you know, North American type feminism when the issues and the struggle was completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that you've quoted this thing, womanism, mm-hmm. and I see it here, is actually speaking of a religious concept, which looks at the revising the tradition and practices through the Bible, because then you know that the Bible is actually very, that was here.
Corey, right? Will you see that? I never see that interpretation.
It's actually women's therapy.
Yet.
I'll read it for you. Women's sorry. I got the wrong thing. It's women's theology.
Womanism.
So the womanists actually have a theology where, yes, they're actually paying very specific attention. And funny enough, it's the African American women,
mm-hmm.
looking at how the Bible itself has actually played a part in oppressing women over the time.
Absolutely.
Now, the reason I brought up Caribbean feminism is because I always saw Caribbean women as strong women.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw Caribbean women in the same light as you look at the struggle in women in North America.
Absolutely.
So, and I think that fashioning it in that way would actually be a flaw in the Caribbean.
And we never have. And, mm-hmm. and in fact, womanist lobbying and the women's movement in the Caribbean has never really used feminism as a central rallying point. So back when the four mothers, you know, the Peggy Antrobuses and those women who've created a lifetime of work around this agenda, and Dai from Guyana that we just lost, mm-hmm. those women did not fashion themselves around feminism per se. They fashioned themselves around needs that women in the Caribbean had at that time. And I guess some of them would say to you that they became feminists subsequent to their work. But when they started their work, it wasn't necessarily that they were feminists first and then out of that they created what they created. It was a space that was very much tied to the needs of the society. So the needs for women to have daycare when they worked, the needs to have better health care. There were just issues that they coalesced around, and it wasn't an ism, mm-hmm. for them. So I don't think at all that we should think that that what we're doing now was in any way shaped by anything that was created outside of anywhere but a Caribbean space.
You're listening to Brass Tack Sunday. Remember, we're going to open up the line shortly at 434-1790, 434-1790. And of course, the WhatsApp is always open to you at 266-4862. I want to get down into the crux of some of the issues that face people on a day-to-day, but mm-hmm. I just wanted to start with our philosophical mm-hmm. overshadowing theory as we get further into this discussion, an agenda of gender. Now, there's a concept undertone in the society. I've heard it over and over. What are the women fighting for? They've arrived and they quote five or so prominent positions, the Governor General, Prime Minister, DPP, and they go on, they point at other prominent positions, you know, head teachers, permanent secretaries, all dominated by women. The women have taken over. They've arrived. What are you fighting for? How do you answer that type of tone in the Barbadian society in 2019?
Well, there are a number of frontiers upon which a woman can arrive. And while I accept that Barbadian women are making gains with respect to arrival in their careers, there are still other areas that we are firmly stuck, I would say, in a pre-1900 model. The reality is that although we have had a society for all these years that has been very matrifocal or driven by women, that is overlaid on a patriarchal approach to life. Mm-hmm. So although we have always had, in other words, a society where women have been out front in terms of raising children, in terms of leading households and that kind of thing, you still have a system that gives to males, just by virtue of them being male, the ability to be seen as better than, higher than. And that has not really changed. Now, I expect that as women make progress in their careers, that there will be some shifting of that. But again, we go back to the question of what do the women who are holding the offices believe in at a philosophical level? Because we talk about misogyny all the time in relation to men, but there are women who are also misogynists. So if it comes down to not only having a job, but what you see as your role and responsibility within the job that you have to be able to change perceptions about women and women
That's
leadership.
That's a very interesting concept. Well, tell me specifically though, where the inequalities for women or specific fights for women today?
So the inequalities remain that we still have a staggering rate of women who experience intimate partner and domestic violence across the Caribbean and in Barbados. I mean, the last survey that was done, the last region-wide survey, pinned it at one in every three women that were affected by intimate partner violence. We still have a significant problem with sexual violence against women in the Caribbean. We still have challenges of equal work for equal pay.
That's an issue in the Caribbean.
That is an issue in Barbados. That is an issue in Barbados. That happens still.
I didn't know that we were still at that fight.
We still do have that fight. And in some
cases... Does a post just carry emoluments? This is what the post is for? If you're young, old, black, outside of qualifications?
No. No. And then even sometimes when the salary is the same, the expectations that the woman will have added to her roles in the workplace are different by virtue of her being female. You have many employers now, when they send out a job, notice that they don't put in a salary amount. They leave space for the negotiation. Mm-hmm. And I wonder sometimes if that is helpful or if it's actually hindering, mm-hmm. because it is at that point, although we say that we are equal access in Barbados, I have filled out applications where you still have to say how many children you have. You know what I mean? And so those things, obviously, you can't want to know.
So those questions will not be asked to males as well?
They're still on the application. Mm-hmm. Which is the problem to begin with.
Right.
However, there is a perception in Barbados that if a man has four children, he is still not going to be affected.
Correct. That's
as
a reality,
much.
Not even a perception. That's a reality.
You are a woman now and you're applying for this job and you have four children, automatically the perception is that you're going to be the woman that need a lot of time away from work. You're going to be the woman that need this,
correct.
The next,
child
and the third.
So
the point that it is there to begin with is still an issue.
I don't want to go past the pay yet. I'm saying if I have a government clerk, I'm going to start with the public sector first. A government clerk sitting here, male, government clerk sitting here, female. Mm-hmm. Clerk by because I'm saying, well, all the clerks. But anyhow, the clerks there, aren't they pay the same thing? Pay there?
I'm not necessarily talking about government.
Private sector.
Let's not think of the above the board jobs alone. Mm-hmm. We know that there are still women operating out of one-door shops.
Domestics.
And that kind
shops.
Of thing. Domestics. Okay. There are still segments of the society where there are problematic expectations because somebody is female. Or even, like I said, as simple as being able to get the same pay and benefits. Okay, now I'm not saying that it is a pervasive problem, but what I'm saying is that it is still with us all these years after. And to pretend that it is not there because the Prime Minister happens to be female is simply disingenuous.
Yes.
Everybody is not experiencing life the way that the female Prime Minister is experiencing life. Mm-hmm. That is the reality.
Now, that's something I warn Barbadians of, because they believe, okay, we have female Prime Minister, all female issues disappear overnight.
They don't.
So that is not one that I'm with. But I'm still trying to genuinely understand a lot of these specific challenges, because to understand those or to be able to develop policies for them.
Mm-hmm.
I think the relationship between men and women is not something that you can only legislate.
Yeah.
But I think that a lot of programs that you start starting from young, looking at ill discipline, looking at emotional intelligence is the way really to go to treat
And I
to
agree
that.
With you. So we've spoken about the pervasiveness of intimate partner violence. We've spoken about the pervasiveness of sexual violence. We've talked about conditions, equal work for equal pay. You also have issues around women's access to things like finance. So there are a lot of women in Barbados who run single female-headed households. Again, the bank doesn't necessarily see a single female as the prime person that they want to offer something like a mortgage to.
How do you back up that statement?
When you say how I back it up, what do you mean?
I mean, how can you provide statistics or so? I believe if I go to the banks right now, right?
Uh-huh.
The majority of loans are probably female. The majority of homes in Barbados are owned by female. We need something to back this up.
So what I would back it up by is the number of women that are currently having challenges after, obviously, like you rightly said, there are a lot of females in Barbados who do have homes.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you look at the traditions of how they get those homes, the things that they have to do, the types of loans that they take out, every female in Barbados who has a home might not necessarily have a mortgage against it. Mm-hmm. You understand that, right? So you have to find mechanisms. You also see it in the number of women who are having problems right now having to renegotiate mortgages with the bank, mm-hmm. who are in, you know, for the lack of a better word, financial deep water. And when you talk about the issues that we're still trying to, I know of females in Barbados who have gotten divorces, who have divorce documentation, right? And then at the point where the bank is supposed to regularize, to take the man's name off of the property. And we're not talking, like you rightly said, all of these things now are not, they're not law, it's mm-hmm. more practice. Mm-hmm. She finds a difficulty in having that man's name removed, not because there's anything in law that is blocking it, but just because it feels wrong to somebody to have the name removed. So those are the kind of things that we're talking about, and really and truly a lot of it is still steeped in the perception that we have of women and the perception that we have of where the place of women is. So those are still concerns that we have. One of the major concerns that we still have is childcare that is safe and affordable. We have a lot of childcare that has sprung up across the island in the last couple of years, daycare and that kind of thing. But when you look at the cost of daycare, and also when you look at, you know, some of the limitations like the hours of daycare and that kind of thing, there are some women who are still finding it very difficult to find access to safe and affordable daycare. And that is always exacerbated once it's vacation.